Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past five shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Russia's Sputnik Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, and NHK Japan. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We will begin with a litany of brief global COVID and vaccine updates. In Brazil, all the heads of the military branches have quit in opposition to President Bolsonaro. There was an international conference on aid for Syrians which fell short of its goal, and seven leaders of the pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong were found guilty and await sentencing. Radio Deutsche Welle.
The number of patients in intensive care units in France is approaching a new peak, climbing to more than 4,800. Doctors are warning they may have to start turning away patients who need ICU care. Johnson & Johnson says it will start delivering its single-shot COVID vaccine to Europe on April 19th, which should help the continent speed up its vaccination drive. And England is easing restrictions slightly. People are allowed to meet in small groups and can resume outdoor sports such as basketball, tennis, and golf.
World leaders, including German Chancellor Angela Merkel, are calling for an international treaty on pandemic preparedness. The goal is to use lessons from the current pandemic to protect future generations. Scientists, meanwhile, say new vaccines could be needed within a year as the first generation shots are rendered ineffective by mutations. The scientists stress that a global vaccination effort is required. And Iran says a fourth wave of the coronavirus pandemic has taken hold in western and central areas of the country. That's been triggered by widespread travel and celebrations during the current Iranian New Year holidays.
The leaders of Germany, France, and Russia have discussed the prospects of getting Russia's Sputnik V vaccine approved in Europe. They also talked about producing the shot in the EU. Chile has signed a new deal with China's CanSino Biologics for 18 million doses of its one-shot vaccine. Chile boasts one of the world's fastest inoculation drives. And the United States, the European Union, and other Western countries have called on China to give full access to all data about the origins of the virus after the WHO said that Beijing withheld some information from investigators. Italy has ordered a mandatory 5-day quarantine for travelers entering from other European Union countries. Travelers from outside of the EU already have to quarantine. Much of Italy remains under tight coronavirus restrictions as the country battles a third wave of infections. The whole of the country faces a 3-day lockdown over the Easter weekend. Italy has reported more than 108,000 deaths so far, the highest toll in the EU.
BioNTech Pfizer says a study showed that its vaccine is 100% effective in children between the ages of 12 and 15. The company says it will aim to get shots to teens before the next school year starts. Meanwhile, Russia has become the first country in the world to approve a COVID-19 vaccine for animals. It aims to reduce the spread of virus mutations in species such as mink, which are vulnerable to infection. And China says there's no basis to accusations it did not share data with researchers that were looking into the origins of the virus. The World Health Organization has accused Beijing of not giving its scientists full access to available information.
Brazil has recorded another daily record in COVID-19 deaths, with 3,780 people dying in the last 24 hours. Brazil currently accounts for around a quarter of all deaths worldwide on any given day.
To France now, which will close down schools for 3 weeks to fight a rapid spread in coronavirus cases. President Emmanuel Macron has warned that without action, the authorities risk losing control. Earlier, the National Assembly voted to approve new measures to combat the virus. These include a nationwide curfew and a one-month ban on domestic travel. Many opposition lawmakers have criticized the government for waiting until the situation deteriorated before taking action. Meanwhile, the virus continues to tighten its grip on France, with almost 60,000 new cases reported in the past day.
We're going to turn our attention to Brazil now, where President Jair Bolsonaro is facing one of the biggest crises of his presidency after the heads of the Navy, Army and Air Force all quit. And that as the country records its highest daily COVID-19 death toll. The pandemic has also exacerbated Brazil's economic crisis, and millions more people have lost their jobs and their homes. An international conference on aid for Syrians facing extreme poverty has missed its target. The virtual talks raised 5.5 billion euros. That's 3 billion euros short of its goal. The United Nations says coronavirus is making the situation in Syria even worse.
A court in Hong Kong has convicted seven leading activists and politicians for taking part in anti-government protests. They include veteran pro-democracy politician Martin Lee and media tycoon Jimmy Lai. They face up to 5 years in prison. The verdict is another blow to the flagging democracy movement.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. On to Sputnik Radio. On his program called Going Underground, Afshin Ratansi interviewed Professor Aviva Chomsky, daughter of Noam Chomsky. She discusses the U.S.-Mexico border crises, how U.S. immigration and foreign policy are behind thousands leaving their homes in Latin America and heading for the United States, why $4 billion for El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras in disaster aid won't end the migration crises, and U.S. interventions and regime change operations that have impoverished millions in Latin America. Russia's Sputnik Radio.
Joining me now is Noam Chomsky's daughter, an internationally renowned historian in her own right, Salem State University's Professor Aviva Chomsky, who joins me from Massachusetts. The world is obviously looking at this televised trial of George Floyd, taking some of the headlines away from the U.S.-Mexican border. How is structural racism, do you believe, linked to the detaining of children by Joe Biden on the border between the U.S. and Mexico?
While it's important to look at what's going on with children on the border right now, it's also really important to contextualize it. That is, I don't think that the crisis should be defined as the fact that Joe Biden is detaining children on the border. I think that we really need to look a lot bigger to understand what's going on and to understand the role of structural racism in it. I think that foreign policy is a really big part of it, and understanding why children are being forced to flee from Central America and how our immigration policy and our foreign policy have worked together to create a crisis in Central America to militarize not only our border, but to force Mexico to militarize its own southern border and to force Guatemala to militarize its own southern border. That is, immigration policy and foreign policy have promoted an economic development model for Central America and Mexico, but especially Central America right now, that is forcing people to flee and then pushing them back. It's a model of poverty and violence. And the few children who make it to the U.S. border, Donald Trump was holding them in Mexico. That is, unaccompanied children who are requesting asylum in the United States. Trump was not even letting them cross the border. What Biden has done is now to slightly open the border to allow in only unaccompanied children.
Biden's been talking about natural disasters. And when it comes to those countries, Biden's got a plan, $4 billion for El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras.
These so-called natural disasters are a result right now of climate change, and climate change has human causes. It's not a natural occurrence. So when we see these destructive hurricanes, we should not call them natural disasters. We should call them human-caused disasters. But the other thing is that the impact of a hurricane depends on social structures. Who has land? Who has houses? Who has infrastructure to withstand things like so-called natural disasters? And who is destroyed by natural disasters? Well, it's the poor. So the impact of so-called natural disasters is very much shaped by structural racism, as you suggested. It's not just that, oh, it happened and it hurt everybody equally. But those $4 billion that Biden is giving to Central America basically are going into two different areas, and neither one is going to help the poor people of Central America. Part of it is going directly towards military, policing, drug wars, and border control. That is not going to help the people of Central America. The other part is going to promote the very same export-oriented, foreign investment-based economic model that has destroyed Central America's economies for the last four centuries and has not helped the poor. It has helped foreign investors. It's helped profits and overconsumption of cheap items in the United States, ranging from our clothes, coffee and bananas, to the fruits and vegetables that are produced cheaply for us by maintaining poverty in Central America, by refusing to let Central American countries do things like raise the minimum wage, by refusing to let Central American workers do things like form unions. And our foreign policy, our economic aid has gone directly towards supporting those models. Let me just mention a few examples. When Nicaragua tried to carry out a revolution in the 1980s to change its social structure, to start privileging the poor instead of the foreign investors, the United States tries to overthrow it. When the Honduran president in 2009 tried to raise the minimum wage, what did the United States do? They overthrow him. When the Guatemalan government in 1954 tried to create rights for workers and peasants, union rights, minimum wages, labor organization, what does the United States do? They overthrow him. So the United States has a very consistent history of promoting the interests of foreign investors over the interests of the Central American poor. And the economic development model that Biden is promoting is the very same one, based on inviting in and protecting the interests of foreign investors, not on a redistributive model that could actually help the condition of the poor in Central America.
I don't know whether we have to automatically invoke your father, but then why is it that on mainstream U.S. television channels, which have been covering the border camps, why is none of this in their coverage, even as a context, even as a sentence?
Well, there's a couple of different reasons. One is that journalism is about the man bites dog story. Journalists really don't have the in the mainstream media the capacity, the time to delve into deep research about why things are happening. And, you know, I went to journalism school for a year, and basically what I learned there is how to write a story when you don't know anything about the topic. That's unfortunate, but that's how mainstream journalism often works. But the other thing is that assumptions about the rightness of U.S. foreign policy, the rightness of U.S. economic policy, the rightness of the global economic order that privileges the United States. And I should also say that is the precise global economic order that is causing the climate change, that is causing the natural disasters, the so-called natural disasters in Central America. Those assumptions are really deeply built into our society, our educational system, and journalists reproduce them because that's how they too are educated and socialized.
Professor Aviva Chomsky, thank you.
That interview was by Afshin Ratansi from his program called Going Underground on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. A caravan of migrants from Honduras was broken up by police blockades at the Guatemalan border. a viewpoint about the U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken calling for a release of the Bolivian coup leader Jeanine Añez and two of her ministers. The Pope sent a personal message to Julian Assange, who remains in maximum security prison in Britain. The Venezuelan government is suing the United States before the World Trade Organization for the sanctions which have crippled its country. A United Nations report accuses France of killing 19 civilians by bombing a wedding party in Mali. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The caravan of migrants that departed on Tuesday from the Honduran city of San Pedro Sula, heading to the United States, has been broken up due to police blockades on the border with Guatemala. Of the almost 300 migrants, only a few reportedly managed to cross the border into Guatemala through blind spots, evading the controls of the security forces. The new caravan is a small group compared to the massive mobilizations that usually leave Honduras for the United States. On the route from San Pedro Sula to the border town of Corinto, the caravan was diluted into small groups. Dozens of minors were detained by the authorities for not having parental permission. Some of the people who managed to advance to Corinto could not pass through customs because they did not carry proof of being COVID-free. Others were turned back by a massive security force on the Honduran-Guatemalan border. The last caravan left on January the 15th with about 7,000 people who were turned back from Guatemala due to a police crackdown on migrants. Since October 2018, more than a dozen caravans have departed from Honduras in efforts to reach the United States, where the migrants hope to find employment and relief from the grinding poverty of many Central American countries.
The United States government, loyal to its traditions, meddles in the sovereign affairs of other nations, as it recently did when demanding the freedom of coup leader Jeanine Añez and two of her ministers in Bolivia. Washington has always felt a strong attraction for dictators, the authors behind riots and assaults against democratic and progressive administrations and de facto rulers. This explains how the United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken has expressed his doubts concerning the legitimacy of the imprisonment of these three people and joined the request of the Organization of American States, OAS, for them to have a fair trial. However, Blinken is unaware that today Bolivia is a state governed by the rule of law, where there is separation of powers and all the guarantees that had disappeared during the administration of Añez and her clique. She was not arrested in vain, for she committed serious crimes, some of them with the entire world as a witness, including the Northern Power, which even avoided further criticism or condemnation. 11 civilians died and 120 were wounded at the hands of the military on November 15, 2019, in Sacaba, a municipality near Cochabamba. 4 days later, the Sincata massacre occurred in the city of El Alto, where another 11 civilians perished and 78 were injured. Añez is directly responsible for these acts because precisely on November 15th, she issued a decree exempting the criminal liability of the army personnel who acted against the anti-coup protests. It was exactly what Adolf Hitler said to the Nazi soldiers before sending them to war. I free you from the chimera called conscience. According to Bolivian law, Añez is accused of sedition, conspiracy, and terrorism. And Mr. Blinken and his boss, Joe Biden, have no doubt that she'll be judged severely, but she'll also be able to enjoy all the guarantees offered to any citizen, precisely those that were never granted to activist Leonard Peltier, the oldest political prisoner in the United States, and the ones denied to Australian journalist Julian Assange, whose extradition is insisted upon. It's like the pot calling the kettle back.
Pope Francis has conveyed a personal message to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who remains incarcerated in a British maximum security prison, battling possible extradition to the United States, the publisher's partner has said. The, quote, kind personal message from the head of the Catholic Church was delivered to Assange's cell by a prison priest, Stella Morris told her Twitter followers. Morris did not disclose the content of the missive, but expressed gratitude to Catholics and other Christians campaigning for Assange's freedom. Assange remains in British custody at the HMS Belmarsh prison as he continues his battle against a US request to extradite him on espionage charges related to his activities with WikiLeaks. The website's founder is seen as many as a prisoner of conscience, punished with the help of the British justice system for exposing the dirty secrets and war crimes of Washington and its allies. In January, Judge Vanessa Bereitzer denied a US request to extradite Assange based on concerns over his mental health, saying he would face oppressive conditions in the US prison system and that he could end up committing suicide. The Joe Biden administration has signaled its intention to continue to push for extradition in February and has submitted its grounds for appeal in the case. The Venezuelan government is suing the United States before the World Trade Organization, the WTO, for the imposition of unilateral coercive measures. According to the legal filing, the sanctions breach international trade rules. Shortly before the proceedings began at the WTO headquarters in Geneva, the meeting was suspended after the United States requested to remove this bilateral dispute from the agenda for not coming from the, quote, legitimate government of Venezuela, an allusion to the administration of Nicolas Maduro. The Venezuelan delegation insisted that it had every right to bring the issue to the WTO, and a debate began in which countries such as Cuba and Russia expressed their support for Venezuela, while others such as Peru, Brazil, and Colombia took the side of the US. The dispute settlement body finally decided to suspend the meeting to allow time for consultations to continue before its next meeting on April the 28th. This is the first meeting of the dispute settlement body since the arrival of Nigeria's Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala at the helm of the World Trade Organization on March the 1st. A UN report has accused France of killing 19 civilians in violation of international humanitarian law when fighter jets launched an airstrike that hit a wedding party in central Mali. Not surprisingly, Paris, Mali's colonial master, has refuted the report's findings. The investigation conducted by the United Nations mission in Mali was launched after residents of a remote village in central Mali affirmed a French airstrike on January the 3rd struck a wedding party, killing civilians. The report claims that a wedding was being held where the strike hit, with 100 civilians gathered and five armed individuals believed to be militants from the Katiba Seram jihadist group. The military action killed at least 22 people, 19 of whom are thought to be civilians, according to the UN's findings. Quote, the group affected by the strike was overwhelmingly composed of civilians who are protected persons under international humanitarian law, the report said. This strike raises serious concerns about respect for the principles of the conduct of hostilities.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but the podcasts have not been updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. I am grateful for donations from two listeners in Whitethorn, California. Many, many thanks. We will conclude with NHK World Radio Japan. Thursday marked 2 months since the military staged a coup in Myanmar. Protesters continue to take to the streets, with 536 civilians being murdered by the soldiers who have also been bombing rural opposition groups. NHK Japan.
Turning now to Myanmar. Thursday marks 2 months since the country's military staged a coup. Protesters have organized demonstrations almost daily since then. The military has declared a 1-month ceasefire in its fight against ethnic armed groups supporting the anti-coup protesters, but it's indicated no intention of easing its crackdown on the protesters. People in the largest city of Yangon have been staging demonstrations for nearly 2 months since the coup. They sing songs to commemorate those who've died during the crackdown by security forces. A local human rights NGO says 536 people have been killed, including children. The military has also carried out airstrikes against armed ethnic minority groups that have been attacking military positions in support of the protesters since last weekend. The military has also sent ground troops into areas controlled by the groups to step up its offensive. Amid growing fears of a showdown between the armed groups and the military, thousands of people, mainly ethnic Karens, have evacuated to the Thai border province of Mae Hong Sung since the weekend. A local NGO says most of them have already been sent back. The Thai government announced on Thursday that around 200 are still in the country, with some receiving medical treatment for injuries. A Karen woman working in Mae Hong Sung says her daughter and her husband on the Myanmar side are still hiding in the jungle to escape the airstrikes.
I am so worried about my daughter and my husband. I am concerned that they are starving. I would like the Thai government to accept us and to give us shelter.
On Wednesday night, the military announced that it would suspend operations against the militants for 1 month starting on Thursday, unless there are more attacks. It called on the militants to agree to talks on a ceasefire. But the statement makes no mention of ending the violence against protesters. A Karen ethnic NGO told NHK that they witnessed air attacks on Thursday. Meanwhile, a body of ousted lawmakers, including members of Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy, released a statement on Wednesday. The group, called CRPH, called for the abolishment of the current constitution, which strongly reflects the intentions of the military. A special envoy to the United Nations, appointed by the group, told NHK that they're working on drafting a new constitution in cooperation with a wide range of groups.
Our interim constitution is ready. It is done by so many experts, both that includes ethnic arms organizations, civil society organizations. It was reflections of the wishes and the will of the people of Myanmar.
Sasa also said the CRPH is calling on all ethnic minorities and armed groups to join hands in order to topple the military junta.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 7245 and 7355, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 25th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.